Welcome back to Octopulse, our Detroit News, Detroit Red Wings podcast. I'm Mark Faulkner, Detroit News assistant sports editor, joined by Ted Colfin, our Red Wings beat reporter. And coming up on the podcast, we'll hear from former Red Wing Ted Nolan, who has written a book called Life in Two Worlds, A Coach's Journey from the Reserve to the NHL and Back. But first, Ted, the NHL trade deadline, your lead today at DetroitNews.com, you wrote, the Red Wings didn't do much at all leading up to the end of Friday's NHL trade deadline, then followed up later in the evening, not doing much at all in a 4-0 loss to the Arizona Coyotes. You were in Arizona last night. You're in Vegas tonight. Jonathan Berggren has been called up for the games. The Wings are still in that final playoff spot, tied with the Lightning. The Lightning will host the Flyers tonight in a game with major implications for the Atlantic and Metropolitan races. The Islanders tomorrow night are in Anaheim. The Islanders have won 5 in a row and are just 2 points back. Ted, we've got a playoff race here, don't we? And it sure beats the alternative.
Yeah, but Mark, isn't it amazing? I think the last time we talked, it seemed like the Wings were comfortable in their position and leading by a handful of points, about 6, maybe 7 points. Amazing how things can change in an instant. I mean, goodness gracious. Suddenly, you're right. I mean, looks it's a playoff race, but suddenly the Wings are far from being secure like they did look like, relatively speaking, a few weeks ago. It's what a 4-game losing streak can do, I guess, while the Islanders and some of these other teams are rolling. And by the way, Mark, that game last night, I mean, I'm sure you watched it too, obviously, about as poor. First period was about as poor as they've played this season, and just the entire 60 minutes. I don't know about you, but it was not an impressive performance, to say the least. And frankly, I was a little surprised given the circumstances and what's at stake this time of year.
Now let's hear from Red Wings general manager Steve Yzerman. Here's your question about the deadline. The Wings making just that one minor deal, Klim Kostin to the Sharks for Grand Rapids defenseman Radim Chamek and a 7th-round pick.
Did you feel you were close at all today, or is nothing even really close when he came down to it?
Well, we traded Klim. So we were kind of, if anything, trying to accomplish today would be, trying to add another forward. That would be the one thing we could do. We certainly did a lot of talking, close, in that, there's some tipping point to, do we want to give up, what are we willing to give up for that player? And you get to that point and it's like, we weren't willing to go beyond that, in all these circumstances. So, but ultimately, like over the course of the last month, you kind of get a gauge of, how active you're going to be. Like every now and then a surprise will come along, but you got the sense in as you're working around the league, like it's probably going to be a quiet deadline for us. These are the things we'd like to do. But then you're trying to figure, okay, who can we get? What can we get? What is this player there? What can we get? And it was like, oh boy, like we can't afford to pay that. That doesn't make sense to do that for us. So then it's like, maybe we'll just hang tight and see if something falls into our lap earlier this afternoon, right before the deadline, and kind of kicking around a few ideas on, like I said, a replacement for Klim. But it's like, geez, that's an awful lot to pay for, where we think that particular player is going to fit into our lineup or how much he's going to be used. And it was like, we'll just bring up the guys from GR and keep those picks.
Ted, there you have his explanation. Makes perfect sense. Why trade a high draft pick, 2nd or 3rd round, for a player who isn't really going to be much better and arguably not as good as, say, an Andrew Kopp as a 3rd-line center, or taking ice time away from, say, Olli Maatta as a 5th or 6th defenseman? And then he just said, we'll just bring guys up from GR. What did you make of Steve Yzerman's strategy then, Ted? And what did you make of all the questions about Simon Edvinson, who had a couple of more shots last night in the 2-1 shootout loss against the Chicago Wolves.
People want to see Berggren and Edvinson, obviously. But Mark, you're right. I mean, it makes sense. I mean, why are you going to pay an inflated price for somebody who knocks, like you said, Andrew Kopp out of the lineup, or an Ole Mata, or what, a Christian Fisher? Just doesn't make much sense. And I don't think this team is near that capability to do that, to pay the big price or whatnot, just to add to the roster. They made the right choice, I believe, but boy, going back to that first segment, Mark, they need to play better than they did last night. And if they're going to remain in this thing, they really need to turn it around quick, because you get the sense that some of these other teams are going to start hitting the accelerator. I mean, a team like Tampa, I like what they did yesterday. Islanders playing good hockey. People just can't get rid of Philadelphia. They just keep on playing well. Mm-hmm. They need to reverse this course, reverse this losing streak pretty quickly, Mark.
Coming up on the podcast, we'll hear from Steve Yzerman again about these final 6 weeks of the season. And we'll take a look at what other teams did at yesterday's trade deadline. The Golden Knights, the Stanley Cup champions, tonight's opponent, they loaded up big time with Hertl, Hanifin, and Mantha. But first, our special guest, Ted Nolan. Joining us now is Ted Nolan, a former Red Wings draft pick who spent 7 years in the Detroit organization, a former NHL Coach of the Year with the Sabres, and now the subject of a new book, Life in Two Worlds, A Coach's Journey from the Reserve to the NHL and Back. Ted, welcome to the podcast. And for our Red Wings listeners, that journey from the reserve, the Garden River First Nation Reserve, just outside of Sault Ste. Marie in Ontario, to playing with Wayne Gretzky and the Sioux, to being a fifth-round draft pick by the Wings, and winning a Calder Cup in Adirondack. So, Ted, what was that move like for you, becoming a pro, talking to Ted Lindsay, and what do you remember most about those early years in the minors?
Well, great question, Mark. I think the gentleman you said right at the end, Ted Lindsay. I mean, mm-hmm. if it wasn't for Ted, we certainly wouldn't be having this conversation. Coming up on a First Nation community, I played hockey, but I never really trained at it. I just loved the play, sure. But I didn't know the intricacies of the game and conditioning levels and what have you. And when I got drafted to Detroit and I went to my first pro camp, and I tell you, I was the first time in my life I was intimidated. These guys have big beards and have big arms. They're 30 years old and they're big men. And I tell you, first time in my life I got intimidated a little bit. Sure. I went to the hotel. I hate to admit this, but I stole my first at my first camp, I walked by and I seen a Detroit Red Wing jersey. And I grabbed it. It was number 11, just for, because I never ever thought I'd return. So thank God, when I got home, there was a message for me to call back Mr. Lindsay.
Ted, you wound up playing 60 games with the Red Wings in the 1980s, 41 games in 1982 with 4 goals and 17 points, 19 games in 1984 with 1 goal and 3 points. What were some of the highlights? And for our fans, the coaches back then were Wayne Maxner and Billy Day, right before Nick Pilano took over as coach. Mark Osborne was the leading scorer. He's now a scout with the LA Kings. I talked to him the other night up in the press box. And Danny Gare was the captain, the last captain before Steve Yzerman, who went on to become captain for 19 years, 3 Stanley Cups. So that Wings team, Ted, in 1982, they won only 21 games. What stood out to you?
Well, I was just a deer in the headlights. I was just so excited just to be there. I was growing up in outside of Sault Ste. Marie, Ontario, which is across the river from Michigan, and going up to watch the Tigers play in the off season. Growing up a little bit, watching the Red Wings with Gordie Howe, obviously, and Ted Lindsay. I was a big Detroit fan, so when I got drafted by Detroit, you couldn't pick a better place. Up I-75, and my family can come up. But that first game I played, it was just one of those. I don't remember too much of my career, mm-hmm. but the first game, putting on a Red Wing jersey, playing in front of my family and friends, that was a game I'll never forget.
Ted, I talked to Jimmy Devolano about your time with Detroit. He joined the team in 1982 as GM, and he's now vice president. He remembers you being very quiet and shy, and he said if you had told him back then that you would someday coach an NHL team and have some success, he said he wouldn't have believed you. So what happened in that transition from player to coach? In the book, you said you had some great mentors. You mentioned Jody Gage helping you with stick handling, Tommy Webster helping you with your shot, Bill Hogeboom with your skating, and you also mentioned Bill Dineen, who you said had a profound effect on how you treated your players. Bill won a couple of cups in Detroit, two Calder Cups in Adirondack, two Avco Cups in the WHA when he coached Gordie Howe with the Houston Aeros. Ted, you talk about Bill's empathy and ability to connect. What was he like?
Well, you know, there's an old saying, Mark, you know, people don't really care how much you know until they realize how much you care. And okay. Bill was just one of those guys. He just seemed to really care. And, you know, he was the first coach in my whole life, in my whole environment with hockey that he seemed to care for you as an individual. He asked you how you're doing, how's the family, which not too many coaches did. And if you made a mistake, he would explain to you why. So his communication skills with the players was just outstanding. And so when Jimmy D said he never envisioned me, I never envisioned myself being a pro player, let alone being a pro coach. But it just kind of fell on top of me. But the coaching aspect, I just really fell in love with because, you know, growing up, not too many guys outside of Ted Lindsay and Bill Dineen that I met along the journey that really cared about you.
Ted, talking about coaching in your book, Life in Two Worlds, you said you probably gained more satisfaction coaching than playing hockey. So how did your culture, your background, the way you were raised by your family, the lessons you learned from your mom and dad, how did they influence your style of coaching? And, you know, your book kind of reminds me, Ted, of Phil Jackson's book, Sacred Hoops. Phil Jackson was Michael Jordan's coach. He was Kobe Bryant's coach, an 11-time NBA champion. And he would give books to the players on road trips to read. He teach the players about Zen philosophies, respecting the enemy, being aggressive without anger or violence, living in the moment and staying calm in the midst of chaos. So what lessons did you try and teach your players?
Well, growing up in our community, I'm from a large family. I got six brothers and five sisters, and mm-hmm. we counted up our nephews and nieces a number of years ago, and I counted up 156. that was the ones that we could remember.
Yeah, but yeah.
Very large family, and I always thought, and I tell this to my wife all the time, I always thought that I was the spoiled one of the group, the one they loved the most. Then all of a sudden I heard my sister say it and my brother say it. And it was just amazing. We all felt it. And yeah. That's the type of leadership that I really wanted to partake in hockey. It doesn't matter if you score 60 goals or 80 or two. Everybody deserves to be treated fairly and equally. I'm not saying equal ice time, but
sure.
As a human being, you should be treated. So I just took that philosophy into coaching. And it's funny you mentioned Phil Jackson.
Yes.
When I first started coaching, I didn't have a foggiest idea what I was doing, except for remembering what Bill did and what Wayne Maxner did and
okay. The
coaches I did. And then I picked up Phil Jackson's book. And that just hit a chord with me. The way he talked to his players, the way he brought native spirituality into his dressing room.
Yeah.
And Buddhism and what have you. And I'm just going, man, if he could do that with Michael Jordan, Scottie Pippen and all those guys, I'm certainly could bring it into yeah. a junior ring. So I brought some of my spirituality with me into the locker room, and it just seemed to fit. The players loved it, and we had great success.
Ted, how did those lessons help you deal with racism? In the book, you tell the story of being up with the Red Wings in the old Olympia room for players and families. One of the players asked if you knew how to Indian wrestle, and you guys wound up wrestling on the floor, you in your brand new suit. And you asked the question in the book, like, how many other new players had to submit themselves to this sort of public spectacle? And another time in Adirondack, Ted, you were having a difficult practice. You said the puck was bouncing over your stick, and one of the coaches grabbed a stick, raised it up and down, and was doing the tomahawk chop. And that coach said, this is the way Ted stick handles. Apparently, you said you threw a punch, you landed a blow, you skated off the ice, you got dressed and went home and told your wife, Sandra, that's it, we're out of here. And those were your teammates. So you said you were subjected to all kinds of racist remarks. What should people know, Ted, about racism?
Yeah, you know, it's a very vicious thing. I mean, we've been seeing it for generations. And I never really understood it until I left home when I was 16, when I went to the Manitoba Junior Hockey League. And that was the first time I never fought in hockey. When I went there, I had my first fight in practice. One of the guys said, "What are you doing here, you stinking Wahoo?" And I'm going, and I speared him back. I still remember I speared him back and I said, "I was here first." Mm-hmm. And I think I had such a strong upbringing with my who I was as a First Nation man. We went to powwows, we went to ceremonies. Our elders talk about the AIM movement at the time, the American Indian movement, and we had some Billy Russell Means and all those type of guys. They were just they were so proud of who they were, and they fought so hard. And I read another interesting book, The 13 Winning Heroic Strategies of Sitting Bull.
Okay.
And, man, if they could fight through what they had to fight through, and our elders had to go through residential school, I'm more than positive I could fight through some name calling. And it was tough. Now, don't get me wrong, I cried myself to sleep on a number of occasions, and not remembering too much of my hockey career. The only thing I remember was when I was all done. I said, "Thank God, I don't have to do that no more." And it was extremely, extremely tough. But I fought through, but along the way, I did meet some really good gentlemen. Jody Gage, you mentioned Greg Jolly, you know, Peter Mihalovich, he's a guy that won a couple Stanley Cups, and here I was a teammate with him. And Greg Smith with the Red Wings, Greg Steffen with the goalie. I mean, I met some really, really good people along the way that made the transition a little bit better.
Ted, thanks for your time so far. Just a couple of more questions on the podcast. Beginning with the 1997 season, you were named the Jack Adams NHL Coach of the Year, the same year, by the way, that the Red Wings won the Stanley Cup, the first cup in 42 years. Now, Jack Adams, for Red Wing fans, he was the GM of that last Stanley Cup champion with the Wings in 1955. He won three cups as a coach in Detroit, 36, 37, and 43. His GM cups were in 50, 52, 54, and that last year, 55. Now, in 1997, the Sabres, you had 92 points, Ted. The Wings had 94. Your team had Dominik Hasek, who won the Hart Trophy as MVP, the Vezina Trophy as best goalie. Michael Pekka won the Selke as best defensive forward. Bob Bugner was on that team, now an assistant coach here in Detroit. He was a rugged defenseman. He had 225 penalty minutes that year. Rob Ray had 286 penalty minutes. Matthew Barnaby, 249. Your leading scorer would have been Pat LaFontaine from Waterford, but he was sidelined with a concussion. So your leading scorer was Derek Plante with only 53 points. He was ranked 78th in NHL scoring, and his son Max now plays here in Plymouth with USA Hockey. So Ted, what was that year like, 1997? You were named Coach of the Year. And what was it like facing Eric Lindros and the Legion of Doom in the second round of the playoffs? They knocked you out, and then the Red Wings beat Lindros and the Flyers in the final.
I tell you, Mark, that was probably the it was almost like being born again. It was just I finally found my calling in sport. I just loved loved coaching. I really did. Sometimes, whatever it is, some people have certain talents for certain things, and mine, hockey just came so easy for me. I mean, it's really not a complicated game. It's you put the puck in the net one more time in the opposition, you win. I mean, it's a game of mistakes, and if you make fewer than the opposition, your chances improve. But in order to do that, you need a whole team. You don't need top two lines. You don't need a top three. I think you need a complete line. You look at the success of the latest Stanley Cup winner, Las Vegas. I mean, they had can you name 10 guys on their team like that? You have to think about it a little bit. Mm-hmm. Then you look at, with my son, when he won with the LA Kings, I mean, they just had a good team. And that's what it takes. So I just really fell in love with the game. And when I got to Detroit, and then all of a sudden you had characters on the team like Rob Ray and Matthew Barnaby and Brad May. I tell you, I just fell in love with these guys because they just competed hard. They just competed hard. And we had a great goalie that stopped the puck. And it was just one of those things. And then it kind of hit me like a brick inside of the head. My mother always told me when I was growing up, because we had so many broken promises and broken treaties, and she always told me, she said, "Ted, do not trust the juggernaut." And juggernaut is our word for white people. And I always questioned why. I mean, I went to school with a lot of people from the city, and they seemed fine. And so anyways, those words were always stuck with me. And then all of a sudden I get to Detroit or Buffalo, you win the top prize in the league, and all of a sudden was out. Then the rumor started. I was drunk at practice. I was lazy, and those type of things really, really hurt. And then I got to let go, and all of a sudden nobody else would hire me or even talk to me at the time, except for a couple in the book, you'll find that out. But it was just very, very devastating. I went into a very dark place for 4 or 5 years. I almost lost my marriage because of it. And thank God I went through some counseling and I got through it and fought my way through and just realized, hockey was just part of my life. It's not who I am and what I do. It's just, unfortunately, it was a sad situation, but I just felt, coaching was one of those things that I felt that I one day I'd be raising the Stanley Cup. But thank God my son Jordan brought it back home to Garden River.
In fact, Jordan won 3 cups, you're right, 2 with those Kings teams, and he was also part of that Blues team in 2019. So wrapping things up, Ted, you just talked about spending your life in two worlds, one in which you said you were loved and accepted, and the other one where you were told you didn't belong. And for the most part, it seems like you had a really good experience here in Detroit, your first 7 years as a player. In fact, the Wings came back to you in the spring of 1991, to coach in the American Hockey League, but you were learning your craft in the OHL, taking the Greyhounds to 3 straight Memorial Cups with Sherry Basson. So you said it's been an extraordinary privilege to play and teach this game. You mentioned your mother, the Rose Nolan Foundation, the Ted Nolan Foundation, working with your 2 sons with 3 Nolans. But you've also said in the epilogue that the passage of time has done nothing really to soften that sting about what happened in the NHL, and you discussed it just a moment or so ago about not getting a job right away, dealing with racism, rumors, outright lies. So how do you balance all of that, Ted? The joy of working in hockey with the disappointment of sometimes being on the outside looking in?
That to me right there is the biggest thing. I think the game itself and in itself has to get to know people before you judge them. I mean, there's so much judgment before you know. I ran into some hockey people that just kind of walk and turn the other way. They don't know. So I think they still think I'm that guy they read about or had a misunderstanding about that. I just really think that you really should get to know someone before you pass judgment. And that's one thing that I loved about the game itself. I mean, the players are great. The competition sometimes gets out of control a little bit with words and what. But the game itself is a real good game. It just has to be a little bit more welcoming. That who people that look a little different deserve a fair and equal opportunity to play this wonderful game.
Ted, thanks again for your time today, talking to us about your time with the Red Wings and learning the game from great mentors like Bill Dineen, how that led to being named NHL Coach of the Year. And then you talked about teaching others to understand each other about different cultures, different ways of doing things. And again, the book is called Life in Two Worlds, A Coach's Journey from the Reserve to the NHL and Back. I appreciate you joining us on the podcast today, Ted.
Mark, thanks very much for having me on.
Our thanks again to Ted Nolan. Now let's hear from Steve Yzerman again on yesterday's Zoom call. Ted, you also asked about these final 20 games of the season, moving forward without Captain Dylan Larkin.
Hey, these last 20 games, Steve, what, we're without Dylan for a while here too. What's going to be the key for you guys?
Well, we've had balanced scoring throughout the course of the season. Certainly this year, Dylan scored some extremely timely goals for us in games, and made some big plays at times for us that we're going to miss that. And he logs a lot of minutes for us. So we need the depth of or that balanced scoring to offset what he's missing. But ultimately, we need to be good defensively. Like, and it's not just goaltending. Our play for the most part recently, we've been strong defensively. And right now, without Larkin, it's going to be even more important that we're good defensively. And we need to continue to work at it. And that's collectively as a team. We got to tighten up in Colorado. Now you got like as you saw, Nathan MacKinnon was like on another world. Then he's pretty much been that all season in that game. Like it was like, oh boy, like I don't know what we can do to stop this right now. But collectively as a team, we got to continue to get more solid defensively, and we've been working at it, and we're improving at it. And this stretch here, it just to me makes it more critical that we're solid, sound defensive hockey team. You know, we had the we scored the St. Louis game. It was a 6-1. Then we went into Chicago. We played Washington, and it was 8-3. They were tired. They're a much better team. St. Louis, much better team than they showed in those games. We were able to catch Washington tired. But as you noticed in the Washington game, it's 8-3, but we got loose. We got sloppy. There's a lot of chances both ways. I would prefer to win that game, 5-1, 6-1, or obviously 8-1 is better than 8-3, but we gave up too many chances. And it slowly creeps into the game, and it's even Florida and certainly Colorado. But again, the Colorado one is you got Makar and Rantanen and MacKinnon, and it's just like, oh boy. So that's like, hey, we got to be a strong defensive team, and we got to continue to work at that. And that'll be the key, in my opinion, that'll be the key for us going down the stretch here.
Ted, a solid, sound defensive hockey team, that's what he wants to see, without perhaps their most solid, most sound defensive forward, Captain Dylan Larkin. He also mentioned bad habits at the end of the 8-3 win against the Capitals. Loose and sloppy, he said, slowly creeping into the game. Since that Washington game, where they were a season high 13 games over 500, 8 points ahead in the wild card race, they've lost four straight against the Islanders, Panthers, Avs, and Coyotes last night. Been outscored 20-5. And Ted, listen to these numbers during the course of those four games. Defensively, Seider and Walman are -5. Seider has been running hot and cold, -4 against Edmonton and McDavid, getting a stick lifted by McDavid on the winning goal, -3 against the Islanders. Walman has been off his game, 16 penalty minutes against Florida. Petrie is -5 in these four games with three straight -2 games. Sherratt is -4. And then up front, Raymond is -5. Compher is -5, Ted, leading the team in ice time again last night. 2018 for Compher last night. He played 2306 against Florida. DeBrincat and Rasmussen are -4 in the last four. Kane is -3. We know these numbers could turn around, Ted. The Sabres next Tuesday in Buffalo, back home to face Arizona and Buffalo again. Then Sunday in Pittsburgh, back home against Columbus. And really, it could be the game of the year on March 21st, the Islanders. So how do things look, Ted, right now with the losing streak, but certainly some opportunities to get back on track?
Yeah, but Mark, I mean, some of these teams are still playing pretty solid hockey, and with the intention of, it's a fair, far-fetched dream, but teams like Washington, New Jersey, well, they don't play New Jersey, that's good. No, they play Washington. Pittsburgh, they have a couple of times. Buffalo playing well. I think they're tied right now with Edmonton, I see in the third period. These teams are going to play good hockey. I don't think the season's not done for them yet. Buffalo made a nice move the other day. Look, this is going to be a photo finish at the end. I think we all kind of talked about that the last few weeks. They need to play better defense, like Iserman said the other day. That's really some bad habits have seeped in there. They need more. The offense is going to be interesting. I mean, they do have so much balanced scoring, but boy, without Dylan Larkin, suddenly that lineup looks a little uneven, and disjointed somewhat. The goaltending, Alex Lyon has to suddenly Alex Lyon seems a little bit off his game. I know we're going to see James Reimer tonight. He's been clutch for them the last several starts. He needs to be again tonight. Mark, there's been, let's face it, there's been some questions here that have been opened up here over this four-game losing streak. And well, they keep on saying it, they just cannot afford to get into a lengthy losing streak. That's a sure way to fall out of the race.
And finally, Ted, the trade deadline, what the other teams did, as John Neal wrote in today's column, the front-running Stanley Cup contenders like Vegas, the defending champs, went all in again. He wrote, adding Hanifin, Hertl, and Mantha, or Florida, John wrote about the cup finalists from last year. They traded for Tarasenko and Okposo, or even Carolina. They made a big splash late Thursday to land two-time 40-goal scorer Jake Guentzel. And also, you mentioned the two teams, the Wings are fighting for the playoffs, the Lightning. They added Anthony Duclair and Matt Dumba. The Islanders, Lou Lamoriello, they stood pat at the deadline. The Capitals traded Kuznetsov, Mantha, and Edmondson. The Devils dealt Toffoli and acquired Jake Allen. So what did you make, Ted, overall of the deadline with the Stanley Cup contenders, some of the top teams really loading up for this stretch run?
My friend, I'll just remind everybody that Boston added Tyler Bertuzzi, Garnett Hathaway,
All right.
Dmitry Orlov. I think there was another forward they added at the deadline. Won 135, what earned 135 points in the regular season, and then lost in the first round of the Florida Panthers. It rarely, I don't know. It just. It's a lot, it's very exciting seeing some of these heavyweights add so many names, but boy, it just seems like it never works out. The chemistry sometimes, it's going to be interesting. Like Yzerman kind of alluded to yesterday, it was almost like an arms race, like a junior hockey league trade deadline. Kind of, I mean, Florida looks powerful right now. Carolina looks like a good team. Obviously, Vegas. Boy, I don't know. Chemistry is a pretty important thing, and sometimes, I don't know, less is more in my mind, but we'll see. I mean, it's going to make for an exciting 6 weeks, next couple months. I mean, there's some, on paper, some extremely powerful teams. Mark, that Central Division, goodness gracious, Winnipeg, Dallas, Colorado, three outstanding hockey teams on paper, but you're only going to see one win the division. Boy, it's going to be, it will be fun to watch.
Ted, thanks again for your time today. And that'll do it for episode 99 of our Detroit News, Detroit Red Wings podcast. You can find all of Ted's stories online at DetroitNews.com, as well as on our Octopulse Facebook page. Thanks again, everyone, for listening, rating, and reviewing these podcasts.